Write that down, Fumi Saito.
Hello from Burbank, California. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. It's another episode of Write That Down on the Fight Game Media Network. My name is Justin Nipper. I edit fightgamemedia.com. I write on wrestlingobserver.com. I work for Pro Wrestling Noah Cyberfight Incorporated. I'm back with Japan's leading pro wrestling author and historian, sociologist, and awesome person, Mr. Fumi Saito. But I'm also here. Well, not technically. I was here with the one, the absolutely only, Mr. Sean Waltman, X-Pac, 123 Kid, Lightning Kid, The Kid. He joined us for an awesome and very fun interview. And he actually lives not too close from where I'm at. Small world. We talked about UWA Japan with Sean. We talked about WWF, WCW kind of stuff, of course. Monday Night Wars. Talking to Jim Ross on the phone. We talked about Top of the Super Juniors in New Japan that Sean Waltman had the experience to participate in. Yeah, we talked a lot about his WWF memories, Great Muta, Hakushi, wrestling landscape now and into the future, and lots of other interesting, unique stories from both Mr. Waltman and Mr. Saito, who actually spent a lot of time together hanging out in the 90s, which you'll hear about. This is cool. How am I going to top this, people? I don't know. Actually, I kind of have an idea. You'll find out in the next couple weeks. That's right. Stay tuned. If you've not already, you know what's coming. Please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed. It's on Spotify, and it's on Apple, and it's on Stitcher and Google Play, and wherever you listen to your podcasts, hit the subscribe button. Leave us a comment if you like, because it helps us out very much. All right? Enjoy. Fumi, Sean Walton. Sean Walton, like he's in the Walton family. Waltman, excuse me. Sean Waltman, Fumi Saito, and myself. Let's get right into it. Hello from Burbank. Welcome.
Are you in Burbank?
I'm in Burbank. That's right. You in LA?
Eagle Rock.
Oh, not too far. Okay. Yeah, I'm down in Burbank. With our guest, Sean Waltman, and our co-host, Mr. Fumi Saito from Tokyo.
Tokyo!
In the morning. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, yeah, Sean, great. For coming on with us. This is awesome.
Oh, welcome. Yeah. This is great. It's weird. So good to see you, Sean.
And you, Fumi. This technology makes it kind of like we're in the same room together, except we're not. So I miss you, man. I miss you a lot.
I miss you a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
When's the last time you guys hooked up? When's the last time you saw each other?
When WrestleMania was in San Jose.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I think that was the last time, right?
That was last time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I stayed in your hotel room.
Yeah. 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 I think you slept on the floor. Or one of them, maybe my friend did.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was good. That was it. Shit. Because Scott Hall was in the other side of the hotel, but he came in, you know? And yeah, that was it. So it's and not.
Shooter Jennings. Remember Shooter Jennings? The picture with us was Shooter Jennings, the country rock.
Yeah, Waylon's son.
Waylon's son, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, your hotel room was really amazing because people kept, you know, knocking the door just to visit.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, how you doing? Then sit around for 20, 30 minutes and then say, okay, got to go. Then another person said, hey, how you doing? Well, it's like we're being entertained.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like I've been wanting to do this, and you told me that you're doing a book this time, or you're not, you can't publicize it yet.
Well, I haven't told anybody? The general public that I've started it yet. Because like I've talked about starting it before, and there's been like almost starting, but then you know it didn't. Just things come up, and you know, never got going on it. So now, like,
okay. It's really going.
Like 14 or 15, 2-3 hour sessions in now, you know?
Ah, okay, okay.
So
okay.
We're into it now, you know?
Right, it's almost impossible to put it in one book, you know?
And it's just for me to, like, and that's why I need somebody, you know, to help me write. Like, Fumi, I used to be able to actually write. Like, yeah, just like for me these years later, man, it's hard to focus. I think it's like, you know, too many shots to the head. And maybe some other things too, you know?
Yeah, and also, yeah, it's like memory is not as organized. Or I'm bad at this, what year and what month and what order, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's what the content of the book, it's impossible to have it in one book. So let's do the one book first and see how you do it, because it could be like, what is it, today's, you know, wrestling fan don't know, but the, like a vinyl, you know, side A and side B, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Record in the side A, it's all hit songs, but the real important song actually in the side B, you know, like a cool song that you don't hear on the radio.
That's right.
By album. Yeah. So it's like, I always talk about side A and side B thing because people know about side A, but people don't know about side B, but those are important. Yeah.
Like, yeah, and there's so much of it. Like, because, you know, I've talked a lot in story, you know, like I've told a lot of the stories before, but so many, like, you know, that I haven't or haven't gone into depth on, or, you know, and a lot of crazy stuff, man, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, so. Depends on which, I mean, wrestling story or your childhood, you know, childhood dream to become professional wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, Florida, the Malenko school, that they're moving to Minnesota, you wanted to see the snow, you had uncle up there, and you had a whole new, different, you know, like a different
Sleeping on Marvin's couch. Marvin's
couch, yeah. And you had a whole new, you know, different set of friends up north in Minnesota, and their independent scene, and Eddie Shirky's school of wrestling, and
Friends. It was so great, Fumi. It was so great when I went to Minnesota. Like, maybe the guys aren't trained as well, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But, like, everything else about it was great.
Yeah,
you know? And not everybody can be trained by Malenko, you know? So
Malenko and Eddie Shirky.
Right. So, I mean, it's hard to go, just because I had excellent training, like, I shouldn't be looking down on, you know, they were doing the best they could. And, you know, a lot of guys, even if they're not trained well, if they are really talented and really have what it takes, they're going to make it anyways.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't have
Minnesota that. Guys, were they a little extra tough compared to some of the other guys you worked with?
The guys that got recruited to be, the guys that were attracted to wrestling in Minnesota, man, yeah, it was a different breed of. Freedom,
The talent wasn't, you know, it's not what, not Tiger Mask, but the toughness.
Some of that too. It's just that, you know, there was being trained by like Brad Rangins, and then there was being trained by Eddie Sharkey. It was two totally separate things, man. You know, but the guys were on the same shows with each other. So
right, Minnesota Independent. And also, it was, you know, years after you had Road Warriors, Nikita Koloff, the Ravishing Recruit, Barry Durso, all these guys came out. Then
and even the guys that came after them, Fumi, you know, like the Scott Nortons and the Wayne Blooms and Mike Enises. You know, there was like, so, yeah, man. And then, you know, obviously Brock Lesnar and Shelton Benjamin. So I don't think Shelton was a Minnesota guy though. Like just University of Minnesota.
University of Minnesota, right? Yeah. But Masa Saito's guys like Tony Holm, Don Fry, they came to Minnesota and trained at the house. Yeah.
That's right.
Whereas Eddie's students, Eddie's kid guys are like your local Minneapolis guy with day jobs, you know?
Yeah.
You have a regular job, but they wanted to be a wrestler, so they train at night or just become wrestler over, on the weekends. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And they spent a lot of time running back across the ring, back and forth, hitting the ropes and doing bump drills.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't even know where to start because it's so good to talk to you. And it was 1991 you came to Japan for the first time. Universal Wrestling. Justin and I talked about, Japanese Lucha Libre group, Universal. And we had a lot of people in, Asai, Ultimo Dragon without mask, Great Suzuki without mask. You had
my first show.
Yeah.
My first debut was when Asai was finishing up.
Wow.
Oh, Asai was finishing up. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That was his last show.
And go to Tenru and go to Triple A and become Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah, because when I was there, guess who was in the dressing room with Asai was Great Kabuki.
Ah, okay, recruiting. He didn't work the show, though. Yeah, but...
No, but he was there, he was working with Tenru at the time, right?
Yeah, at the time, right.
Yeah.
To get Asai. Ah, okay. Yeah, because the Universal group was so interesting. You know, between 91 and 92, well, you were like a 1920, right?
Yeah.
You had seven tours or so in two-year
period? Almost every month.
Yeah, 7-8 tours in two-year period. They put you in a bed and breakfast.
B&B hotel, yeah.
Bed and breakfast is bad, right?
It was like the size of the closet at the Kia Plaza.
They get you on the bus, and sometimes they drive bus all night, and where are you going to sleep, like a sauna?
Yep. The Kinko Land or the Capsule Hotel.
Kinko Land, yeah. Capsule Hotel, too. Oh, God, yeah.
So yeah, man.
That was when they talk about Japanese wrestling company, they're all first class, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't so with this company.
Yeah.
You know?
Fumi, I'm like, it was tough, but I'm so grateful I got to experience the Kenko Land and the and the Capsule Hotel, man.
Capsule Hotel. Seriously. Right. Yeah. But although the people that came out Universal, that Japanese Lucha Libre company existed 3-year period. A lot of people came out, Hakushi, Jinsei Shinzaki Leiro, Takamichinoku, the Dick Togo, the Men's Tale, Jado Gedo, of course,
The whole Kayentai, right? All of Kayentai came from
every single Kayentai, right?
Yeah.
So it was like...
And so, Fumi, am I right when I say, like when I try to describe the Universal Pro Wrestling to people, and where they fit in the,
Japanese history or hierarchy?
Yeah, I always said they were a company without much money. But they had a lot. They had respect. They were respected, right? Like a lot of the guys that went there were big.
Yeah,
I mean, I got to be around all these big legendary luchadors, man.
Oh yeah,
incredible.
The Villanos, the Scorpio, the Brazos, the
Dos Caras.
Shigeno. Yeah, Dos Caras, El Shigeno, Tejano. Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Because
I don't know.
That was a Mexican oriented show.
Yeah.
Fumi and Sean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to think because back then, I don't know if there was much regular Mexican wrestling on television at all. So it was, I feel like it was a big deal for those guys to come over to Japan and show up because it wasn't as common as it is today.
Also,
like around that time, the peso got devalued. It was a huge deal. Like
the 90s, like 93 or something.
No, it was before that. It was around the time I was going there. So it was still, a lot of those guys, that was a lifesaver for them.
They were paid by US dollar in Japan, right?
Yeah. I made a thousand, I eventually got a raise. I was making like $1,200 for the week. And but when I first came, it was $1,000, and you get $100 draw, like in the beginning, $100, like 1,000 yen, right? You got to make it last the whole week.
10,000 yen, yeah, right.
The only person capable of doing that in Japan is Rip Rogers.
Thrifty.
Well, he'll bring the bouillon cube and put it in the hot water.
Nice. We were this, you know, relatively not so expensive, you know, 24-hour Denny's, or yeah. We had ramen noodles together.
Ramen noodles and cream soda.
Yeah, cream soda, the green cream it. Soda with yes. scoop ice cream on top of it. Of course,
yeah, yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah, the reason that the universe was unique was that they brought in real Mexican stars like a welterweight and middleweights. See, not that Antonio Inoki's New Japan, Giant Baba's Old Japan. They had Mexican wrestlers, but they were like a Mel Máscaras, the Dos Caras, the Canet.
Yeah.
Heavyweight Mexicans, like Finchman. But when you talk about six-man tag team situation, Mexican guys, you're going to bring in welterweights. You yeah. know? And then you had El Divo, you know, El Hijo del Santo, all these Blue lighter Demon guys. Junior. Yeah, so... Yeah, so that was a real experience for the first time, you know, because Mel Máscaras really isn't. That's heavyweight giant in Mexico, right? Yeah, so we didn't know real Mexican six-man tag team was, I mean, the spots you never seen before. So, yeah.
Oh, I was I couldn't believe it when I first, somebody showed me the tape of the Universal. I was like, oh, my God, I was so excited to go. Oh man, yeah, I saw, like, you know, the those cowboys, like Tejano Silver King.
Tejano and Silver King, yeah.
Yeah, man. And then I got to be in matches with them, like first, second tour over there,
yeah,
teaming with Wagner Jr. and all that stuff. It was
incredible for me. Those two and Shigeno and Negro Navarro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And all three Brazos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vigiano 3 didn't come, but they had 1 and 4 and 5.
Vigiano. That's right.
Yeah. And, and they were doing the exact Mexican style the Japanese fan didn't know about, you know? So it was good. And also,
more hard hitting, though. Like, I think they turned a notch up when they come to Japan, like, as far as they lay it in more, you know?
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
I think so.
Okay. Then you and Jerry Lynn came in together as Americans, you know.
Yeah.
Light heavyweight Americans. Yeah. So it was good.
Remember Ricky Rice came one time?
Yeah. Ricky Rice.
Yeah. So Ricky Rocket. They called him Ricky Rocket.
Rocket, yeah. Right.
For the Trios tournament.
Ah, Trios tournament. So there was a Mexican connection and Minnesota connection in that, you know, in Universal. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah.
Then after this 91-92, you had 7-8 tours of Universal. New Japan brought you in 93 for junior heavyweight.
That's right.
New Japan, yeah.
Yeah. Was
Benoit, that was young Masa. Benoit and Eddie, right.
I think it was a combination. Like, I remember one time, like one of my last tours for Universal, we were in Corcoran Hall, and I look into the crowd and Liger sitting in the crowd, and I waved to me, and you know,
I said, "You know, we want that guy." Yeah,
I don't know, but like after that, you remember when Hellraisers? You remember when they put the Hellraisers together and they had the show at the bar in Minnesota? Apple,
yeah, of course.
Yeah,
the night you turned heel, though.
No, it was a night. So I got to make the matches. So I put me and Jerry against Brad and Masa.
Right. Okay, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so afterwards, Masa brought me to, you know, call Brad and said, you know, I want to bring me to, you know, for the junior tournament.
Right. And you didn't even think New Japan wasn't even an option. Then right after Japan. Yeah.
I hoped.
But then again, right after New Japan One Tour, it wasn't even an option, but you went WWF TV taping, you got the job.
I was already had the job by the time I went to Japan. By the time I went to New Japan for the tournament, for the Super Junior tournament.
Junior heavyweight.
I already had the 1-2-3. Matt, you know, I already beat Razor Ramon in the Manhattan Center. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you honored the one tour with New Japan then.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was very important that I did that, because who knows what would happen in WWF, you know?
At the time, it was like a beginning of Monday Night Raw era.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, very much so.
And
very much
for me, my aspiration was New Japan, like, because I just didn't think WWE was interested in somebody like me, you know? So
at the time,
and but, I ended up not getting hired when I had my WCW tryout, because they switched the bosses like right after I had my tryout.
But it was good that you would go to WWF over WCW at the time.
For sure.
It was not like a 2 years or so before Monday Night War, but WWE already started Monday Night Raw at the Manhattan Center as like more of a, that's like a Monday night becomes a wrestling night.
Did you see the we just had the 30th anniversary of Raw.
Yeah, of course, last week.
Man.
Yeah.
I remember years. It was just like, it felt like, it doesn't seem like it's been 5 years since the Raw 25 show we did.
Right. It didn't seem like 30 years, right? Maybe 10, 20, but 30 years sounds like a lot of time.
I'm just blown away by how fast like life has gone.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. Because I don't really feel like a different, like, I don't feel like an old, I don't feel like a 50-year-old. Like, I guess I do, actually. I don't know.
Mentality doesn't change.
To feel like. Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, you had a long career from teenage into 20s into early 20s, already in WWE, you know, the WWF. Yeah. Then there was, you know, 1-2-3 kid era, then you world tour that, you know, during what the 93 and 94, you spent a lot of time, WWE did, you know, overseas tour, so many of them at the time.
Yeah.
Like 1/3 of the year you were in Europe.
We were always overseas.
Yeah.
It was like sometimes we would just come back to the States just to shoot TV and then go back overseas again.
Yeah. At the time, that was strange. And, you know, when you were actually not the wrestling character click, but there was a click Wolfpack forming in your hotel room, you know, friends. Later on, it became wrestling character, but it was friends you hang out with, Scott and Kevin.
Yeah. And, oh, that was just, we were Wolfpack. Yeah. When we were
Wolfpack,
when we were separated from Sean and Paul. Yeah. So, I mean, you used to see me a lot back then. Way more than we see each other now, that's for sure.
No. Yeah, I mean, last 20 years like this. But in the 90s, I used to come over to Minneapolis every Christmas, and we spent Christmas together for about 10 period.
Long time,
Long time.
There's a book about that, isn't there?
I mean, there's a chapter or something.
Greetings.
Yeah.
Season's Greetings, that's right.
Season's Greetings. And Jesse was just a baby. You know,
I've seen that at the bookstore.
Yeah, and then your grandpa.
I'm a grandpa. Yeah.
Seriously, but it was interesting that how I learned how, you know, Kevin becoming Diesel and Diesel becoming real superstar by holding the title. You know, I mean, to be honest, he wasn't the best wrestler. You know, but make Diesel a champion, and he growing his hair long as his hair grew longer and he becoming a real star in front of the camera. It was all real. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so he always, the stuff he did looked good, and he always carried his end of a really good match whenever he was in there, man. Mm-hmm, it's like, you know, like, so I mean, he was in technically. He was no Bret Hart, right? So and I guess
not that. But
I don't know anyone wants to see like the Big Daddy Cool do the headlock switch into the hammerlock, drop toe, you know, the single leg.
Yeah, but what he did was original. Sit the guy in the corner and do the elbow, and boot him.
said a lot of people copy that.
Yeah, because it was original. Remember how you know you and Kevin and Sean probably Scott Hall all going to the building real early and work out.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, because
just always spend time talking about everything. You know, talking about how to make it better and how to make the style better, like trial and error, going out there every night and you know, listening to what works and what doesn't, you know, and with reaction, you know?
Yeah. And you're actually working in front of like a live audience of over 10,000 people night after night.
I mean, not always 10,000 people. Business was kind of rough back then, but.
Yeah, but thousands and thousands.
Thousands,
people.
Yeah.
And on TV. Yeah. And being talked to at the airport that they force you to be 24/7 character. Mm-hmm. That's WWE life, right?
Yeah, sure.
Kevin becoming Diesel, really becoming Diesel. I was happy to witness these people becoming like a real superstar. Remember Triple H, second year rookie, joining a group, you know?
And yeah.
That's how, well, now Triple H's the biggest thing, you know, but I was lucky enough to witness how you guys, you know, just developed the whole kid thing. Yeah,
man. Like looking back on it, it was like, we weren't really, well, I can't speak for anyone else but myself, but I wasn't really like thinking about how, like, you know, like, cool all this shit was we were doing, but like it was just having a good time trying to get by, man.
Yeah, looking back, it's 25, 27 years later now, but you're really focused, you know, night after night, how to be, you know, this cool guy, you know, that the Scott becoming more and more Razor Ramon for real, you know what I'm saying?
For real, yeah.
Yes. Shawn Michaels becoming, you know, Heartbreak Kid for real. And also these, you know, group of friends working on top, I mean, programmed in the main event. That helped, you know, just.
Yeah.
And now that the Click story is so famous, but it was like how real it was, people don't realize. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a wrestling tale.
It never was. I mean, it never was an on-screen thing, and it's like
just hanging out. You know, just
meet
up at the airport every weekend, and let's start the horn. You know, just the whole four, five days thing. You're living like family, right?
Yeah. Sometimes, like almost every, like very rarely did we have our own hotel rooms. It was always two or three people in one room. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the rest WWE wrestlers so popular that you don't even go downstairs and lobby to eat. You know, you just have to have room service. Then you ended up getting all the shrimp cocktails and everything, emptying up all the refrigerator at the hotel room, circumstantial, you know, just this and that, and food delivered to your room. And what you do, you are going over what you want to do in the ring.
Yeah.
This is the idea I got. This is my idea. It's going over thing and becomes.
Well, you were there for some of that?
Yeah, some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to see it. It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, of course. That was cool. Yeah. And also, like one WrestleMania or SummerSlam, I brought Hakushi into your hotel room too while you guys are doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See,
I was the first guy to work with him when we went to Japan for that tour in 94, right?
Yeah. Last week, you know, Hakushi, you know, my revival Hakushi had it's called Great Muta's Bye Bye Final Match.
The opponent was Hakushi.
I mean, exact Hakushi 27 years later. And he was the MVP because Muta and Hakushi had this program thing. They ended the finish 25 years later from 1996 Tokyo Dome match. Now he's finishing. Yeah, it's like a, rest, the longer you watch, the more you get out of this thing, you know? Yeah, this is wrestling. Yeah. So, for today's fans probably didn't know Hakushi all that much, huh? But he's the exact same Hakushi now that it's good to have a new wrestling audience from 2000 on. But if you knew Hakushi from 90s, you understand a whole lot more. You know what I'm saying?
I loved the original, the Shinzaki character. When I wrestled him in Japan, yeah. And they had the chanting, oh.
Yeah, the whole, oh, yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah, pilgrim thing. It's real, yeah. You know, as a character. Well, wrestling character, but he's from Tokushima, and it's like so much real background he had. Yeah. Yeah. So that was the thing. And that this, you know, that this 30-year anniversary, you know, the Monday Night XXX thing, you know, the DX, it was way too short, but it was really interesting because it is not, well, that was the DX is great, but you bring in today's character, Imperium,
yeah,
you know, yeah, to get this guy's over instead of you put yourself over.
Exactly.
Yeah,
man.
Because, you know, legend make mistakes sometimes, you know. Nostalgia is great, you know, for older fans and memories and all these things. But to have your Gunther in there, he is a star now. You know?
That's right.
Yeah.
And we go home. And we go home the next day, and those guys got to still be there to try to draw money and make people tune in and watch on television. And you know, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
we're good.
Yeah, of course.
And I was never a fan of that stuff when we would just show up and, you know, get the obligatory, hit our finish on the guys and, you know, happy moment for a little bit for the people that tuned in to see us. But there's just, I mean, it's people can just be happy to see us without us doing that, you know?
Right. And also, it is right to put Gunther over. I don't want to fight him. Right. I don't want to fight him. I mean, he's a tough guy. Today's tough guy. And let's have a match. And no, I'm not fighting, right?
We all legitimately don't need to be in that ring, like,
not anymore.
Beat up anymore, man. We're all pretty beat up, you know, like, none of us, yeah.
But it's complimenting.
Yeah.
Each other, you know? That's good.
But yes, the, and it was fun.
Yeah,
it was
not gonna have actual match. You're not gonna have an actual match there. Yeah, it was really, really good. I mean, so well done. You had a good time putting it together, right?
It was hilarious, man. Like,
was it?
Yes, it was. If there was like outtakes or just like behind the scenes footage of the putting together part, maybe even more entertaining than the actual,
what happened in the ring. Yeah.
Because
that many stars in the ring at the same time, you had to use Kurt Angle's, you know, comic, you know.
He made the whole segment, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I always wanted to be DX, right?
And just the deadpan, like, comedic timing the guy has, and, like, and just his credibility as a real, like, legitimate, you know,
gold medal, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it just adds to his comedy. It just makes his comedy that much better. It's because this guy don't need to be doing that, but, like, you know, he's also the guy that makes you laugh.
He had a rig, you know, his Kurt Angle outfit, then take it off, he got a DX t-shirt, then take it off, he already had the referee jersey. He's like, that was really good. Yeah, and then also, that you don't want to be in the ring that long because the Street Profit, Seth freaking Rollins going to have three, you know, tag team match. Yeah, so it was like a segment was perfect. Because like
all the funniest stuff.
Yeah.
From the stuff I thought was the funniest stuff, I saw Paul come up with that stuff as we were putting that together. Man, he's brilliant at that, man. Just really, really brilliant guy. I'm not just saying that, like, because I'm obviously biased, but I'm impressed because I haven't been around him, like, as much in the, you know. So just to watch how he's developed and grown into what he is now, it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah, but you told me back in 95, maybe, which is, what, 28 years ago, this guy is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
You told
absolutely.
Me that.
Yeah, there was never any doubt.
I'm talking about, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, he was still, But this guy is going to be a big deal. So I looked at him and said, okay, I understood. Yeah.
Yep.
He was in the click room. I mean, as the youngest guy. I mean, age, not youngest, but as a career-wise, he was in second year pro, you know? And you just saw it, right?
Just like you did with The Rock. I mean, obviously not in the same level, but, like, it was the same type of thing. It was like it was a sure bet. It was a sure bet. If you wanted to put money on somebody, you know, reaching that level, like, it was a sure bet. So
barring
injury or some shit like that, but
yeah. So I clearly remember, and I started following him in his career then. Yeah, at the time, it was a really good time. Then this Monday Night Raw thing happened. Monday Night War thing happened, and one by one, you know, the Alundra Blaze, the Scott Hall, the Kevin Nash, the
Lex Luger first.
Right, yeah. The very first episode. Yeah. And then you just got half the WWE went there almost, you know? Yeah. And you were the first one to return, you know, after 97 into 98 then, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I've had pretty good timing in my career.
Yeah. Yeah, because the reason I remember was that Christmas of 97, I went to your Minneapolis house. And again, we spent the entire afternoon. You're down in the basement looking through things and the video and things. And yeah, Kevin and Scott kept calling. It's like, are you going to be back in WCW? So you're already talking to Jim Ross at the time. And yeah.
Oh, you were there when I was doing that?
Yeah.
That's right. So that's right. Also, you were.
Yeah. Because they obviously, you know, Kev and Scott obviously wanted you to be back with WCW. I'll talk to Bischoff about it. But it's like, no, I'm already fired. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't even looking. I mean, I really knew exactly what I was going to do as soon as I got that letter. Yeah, like I was mad about the getting fired part because like it was like, you know, but it was like get out of jail. It felt like, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And not to say it was like all like because WCW was great for me. It just became difficult in the last several months I was there.
Because
Scott was having problems. Scott was having problems that were making Eric have. So, okay, let me rephrase it. Scott was having problems. So Eric had me on the road with Scott even when I wasn't booked on the road. So on my days that I should have been home with my family, quite a few of those days, I was on the road with Scott even though I wasn't wrestling. And that was like, I wasn't getting paid extra because I was on a guarantee, a flat guarantee. So, you know, it was tough. Like, And I wanted a raise. Hmm. I wanted a raise. And so.
They thought, you know, you're Scott Hall and, you know, Nash's sidekick so they can fire you or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and, I will say this, like Eric talks about, you know, I had never signed a contract and I was wanting more money. He's correct about that. Like, I actually never signed my hard contract. I only signed a deal memo. And for the whole time, man, like, So Eric, like, he's right about that. But, like, I still don't believe it when he says, like, it had nothing to do with being mad at Kevin and Scott. I have a hard time with that, but like I do give Eric the, I concede the point like that he makes when he says like, "Hey, Waltman didn't sign this contract," and like he's got points on that.
Yeah, but he was
trying to get a raise.
Yeah, over the Christmas, you're already at home, you know. And, well, it's okay because you know you somewhat sidelined too, you know. So it's like, well,
the neck. Yeah,
stay home and heal, you know.
Yeah,
and. You wouldn't debut WWE until the day after WrestleMania anyhow in the following year. So,
and even then I wasn't cleared to wrestle yet. Right. I still had some, I was still doing therapy and stuff.
Yeah. So it was very interesting that you the only went back to WWE and you're talking to Jim Ross on the phone too, you know?
Yeah.
So, Yeah.
Yeah. Then they didn't want to pay me the money though, like, because they knew I didn't want to go back. The
same,
right?
Yeah. Right. But they had need to be paid the same position as other guys were making at the
time. Right.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I said, and I knew I had information. I knew what other guys were getting paid, and so they weren't happy about me throwing the information in their face. You know,
who are you talking to? Right?
Yeah,
you mean from the WWF? Like,
I knew how much.
The guys in WWF. Yeah.
I see. Yeah, guys that came in there that I was on the same level at least or more.
While you were in WCW, the Billy Gunn and Road Dogs thing, you know, got real, you know, hot.
But Mark, I knew what Mark Miro and Jeff Jarrett's downside guarantees was, and I wanted mine to be at least that.
Yeah, so it's like, because you were in that, you know, group.
Yeah,
you know,
I was like coming in with NWO. Yeah. Like, I had the NWO momentum, you know. I was using that momentum to come in and help DX.
Yeah. Yeah, but they didn't come up.
Let's be honest. 1-2-3 kid joining DX wasn't going to be as big a deal as 6 from NWO.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be 6, so it took you guys a while to come up as X-Pac.
I already knew as soon as I was, it took like the next set of TVs when we actually talked about it. Yeah. I already had in my head, I already knew what I wanted to be called.
Oh, X-Pac. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
And then I didn't sign the contract there for like probably 6 months fighting over the name. I wanted to own the name, you know, because it was, I came up with it. Yeah.
Okay. Because it was the timing was important to be on TV the day before, day after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Because Shawn Michaels leaving, that Triple H taking over the group, I called my friend introducing you into the ramp. So
it's a thing now, right? It's tradition, like day after WrestleMania, Raw is
season premiere.
Somebody's going to show up, right?
Yeah, season premiere. Like you're watching the drama every year, season 10, season 11, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very good. So you still follow WWE Raw and SmackDown both?
I don't watch the whole show.
All right.
I follow what's going on, and then if there's like something has a buzz, I watch it, you know, like, hey, this is good. This was a great segment. I'll watch it.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't have the appetite for it anymore.
Every 5 hours, two sets. Yeah. Two sets. Yeah. Right. Or do you watch then some people watch AEW, Dynamite and Rampage and this and that, you know, or
I watch bits and pieces of that too, you know.
And now that the New Japan in English, you know, commentary thing and all these things. Yeah, it's just impossible to watch everything.
I wish New Japan was, I don't know, did it go back on Access TV? Because
Yeah, they did.
Oh, good, because it was great when it was on Access TV. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, they
enjoyed it with I enjoyed it with Mauro and Josh Barnett doing commentary and Jim and Josh also.
Right. Yeah, see, I didn't realize that the things we just talked about, this the Monday Night War and the WWF to WCW, WCW back to WWE, and debuting day after WrestleMania, every single one of those episodes, it was before, like, internet streaming, let alone social media, you know what I'm saying? Let alone YouTube, you know, that the YouTube doesn't happen until 2005, 6, you know?
And is that when it came out? Yeah,
I think so. And social media was around, but not every day tool for everybody until like 2005. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now that it's so part of your everyday life, it's like so normal. If you are 18 years old, you grew up with it, right?
But never been without it.
Never been without it. Yeah, but we used to, you know, like we had to look for VHS tape. You hear about a wrestler, do you have a tape? You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Promo tape?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now that you hear names.
You got to keep it 3 minutes.
Is that
I was always told you got to keep it 3 minutes.
Oh, promo thing?
Yeah, to send for audition tape, like to get promoter to book you.
Oh, really?
Like that.
If it's too long, they're going to lock you, kid.
it was like, then it was clearly different in Japan. So many, you know, American, you know, wrestlers at the send VHS tape into Masa Saito's desk, right? Everybody sent those 3 minute clips and stuff, you know, and then Masa went like, Masa was like, I don't want to hear the promo and bunch of high spot. He wanted to see the entire match and judge this guy. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, really?
Yeah, the entire match, because you want to see the beginning of the match, how he does things during the match, and how he takes it home. Okay.
Yeah.
No fancy tapes. Just want to watch the entire match. One camera or your home video, doesn't matter. Entire match has to be in there. He was so mad.
He was
in a Japanese way to look at it, right?
Man, I love that guy.
Yeah, because there is no such thing as promo in Japan, you know?
Well, when I was watching on New Japan on Access, I was going to talk. That's what I was going to mention to you, was how well I liked their. They were having promos on there, like, you know, Shunsuke and different people, like, and they would have the subtitles, and I loved it, man. Like, I loved just watch the Japanese promos with the American with the English subtitles.
And it's not like promo, like a storyline promo. They talk about the match that you just wrestled.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty good, though. Like, really, like, athletes and, like, rivalries.
Yeah.
And feud instead of storylines.
It was so refreshing to see. It was so refreshing to see the presentation like that, you know?
Yeah. Japanese wrestling should stay that way instead of, you know, Uncle Howdy or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, for example.
For instance.
So it's like, it's just, it was interesting. You had Japanese, Malenko school, of course, and wanted to see the snow and went to Minneapolis. Obviously, that was after AWA era. So Minneapolis meant bunch of indies, you know?
Yeah.
Then went to Universal, not established Baba's, you know, Old Japan or Inoki's New Japan, but it's a Universal. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it came right at the right time. I just got in my GWF contract canceled. They told me they couldn't afford to pay me anymore.
And also they went out of business, right?
No, not for a while. They did eventually, but it was a couple years later. They were just using guys that could drive to the shows. They couldn't fly me in.
That was like a syndication TV type of thing, right?
Yes, it was over 100 markets syndicated, and it was on ESPN 5 days a week.
Yeah, I used to watch it after school.
Yeah, and decades so many before people, streaming. Man. Yeah, so it's different now that the television itself, television altogether, could be yesterday's news, right? Everything will be on the screen, streaming. Yep. I mean, like Netflix.
I'm already used to it like that. I haven't actually watched cable in forever.
Or traditional television?
No. Yeah, I mean, I still watch the network shows, but it's all through streaming.
Right. So wrestling would be such too. You know what I'm saying? From this point on forward. And all the pay-per-view too. The streaming pay-per-view, you watch, even in Japan, you're paying 4,000 yen, $40 for the show.
Yeah.
Streaming service.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the landscape will change drastically like this year too.
I remember it was a long, it was quite a, how is it, how's the cable universe in Japan now?
The housing situation and how houses and the apartment and building are so built up so close to each other, the actual physical cable wouldn't go in.
So how do they do it now?
Satellite and the internet. Yeah. Wi-Fi all over country, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot easier to actually watch the moving image. Yeah.
Because I remember Samurai TV?
Yeah, Samurai TV still exists, yeah.
Well, it was on
satellite channel.
Yeah. Or They're like JTV or something like that.
JCTV, Japan Cable Television.
Yeah,
right?
JCTV.
Yeah,
but no one had it, right? Like
no one had it.
Maybe 100,000 people had it in the whole country or something.
All together, right?
Yeah.
Then there was a Sky Perfect TV, the satellite dish. That was big. The satellite dish still exists, and I still use it. But more and more, your device will be your TV, like, you know, streaming.
Well, I think in Japan, in general, especially if you're in Tokyo, it might just be easier for people to go see the show live instead of paying for a pay-per-view or,
you know,
or
live wrestling should exist, of course.
I think just live events in general, it's just, it's always been more money in Japan just because of how everything's set up. And not everyone has satellite. I mean,
but then now that you can watch wrestling with this thing.
Right, that's more popular now, like ABEMA and all the digital channels. It's different. It's a different landscape. And,
like I said, then also this ABEMA TV, the streaming service, the Wrestle Universe, all these things, they are offering their iPay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a different economy almost. Yeah.
Like you get the service and then you pay extra for the pay-per-view.
If you want to watch Great Muta retirement match, I mean, live, you'd be paying that on screen. Then if you wait a week or two, you can watch that on regular streaming too.
Hey, do people go to the show and still watch it on the streaming while they're at the show live?
That too, probably. Sure. But I want to be at Tokyo Dome, of course, live, you know.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, it's not easy. I mean, you are actually, everybody's carrying the device, whether it's your smartphone or your iPod or like my regular laptop. It's like you're carrying your own television now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has changed. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible, man.
Wrestling will be in there, though. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, of course, because we come from traditional television to VHS era to traditional pay-per-view era to now streaming. And
it's just the fact that, like, anything you want to see now, Fumi, anything you want to see, you can see it now. Oh, my God. Like, I was just happy to get a tape from Tape Traders that had some matches dubbed together on there. And even if the quality was the bad quality from, like, fourth, fifth generation or
dubbed.
Hit the tracking.
Yeah, man.
Hit the tracking button.
I didn't care. I didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's the only choice you had back then. That's it. If you wanted to watch wrestling from Japan,
even if it was bad wrestling, I wanted to see it.
Bad wrestling,
because it was unique. It was like nothing that you'd see here. Yeah, like you said, it's almost too easy to find everything now. You know, it's not as
I think people take it for granted. Yeah. I think that's all. But I mean, I think it should be that way. I just think people should appreciate it.
Of course, not going to go back. Not going to go back. But it's that today's audience have such a short attention span. You know, short attention span. What's on YouTube is about 5 minutes, right? They think it's long. But if you want to watch good wrestling, you usually over 20 minutes or so. I mean, good wrestling match. And if you want to watch a wrestling match, you have to start from the match to the finish.
People in Japan have an appetite for a more long drawn out match, like a long, like, you know, Kenny Omega versus Okada match, which is one amazing match. It might be a little bit too much for the average American wrestling fan.
Right.
You know, because the build up is so, you know. They just take their time, which I love, but you know, man, people here in the States, it's just like, they like to
boom, boom, boom. Huh?
Yeah, man. They'll put the channel on shit like that.
Yeah. I thought Japanese wrestling used to be just boom, boom, boom. But now it's longer, I think. Well, there was a Omega against Will Ospreay January 4th at the Tokyo Dome. They had 35 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? That's a good. Yeah, that's a nice length for their match. Yeah.
And Okada against Jay White was also 35 minutes. Yeah.
Those are good length. That's a nice length for the main event. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Tokyo Dome show itself was 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's like a 6-hour show. Oof. Oh my gosh. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it's like going to watch baseball game. Some of the matches, I'm sorry, they don't pay attention. Go to concession stand and buy another hot dog.
Yeah.
And come back and sit through. I'm going to watch this closely. Something like that.
Go to the we call it the popcorn match here.
Popcorn match?
You call it that?
Yeah. The popcorn match is the, the popcorn match is usually like fifth match, which is like after right after intermission. Crowd's always dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, probably we call this a toilet time.
Oh, yeah.
Time to go to the bathroom.
I noticed a lot of people going to buy merchandise because the merchandise lines get so long at those shows. So
Like in Japan, like they call Mr. Pop or Mr. Toilet Time. Like, do you remember they had Momota Jr. was Mr. 6:30?
Yeah, because it's come right up.
First match, 6:30, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. 6:30. But with respect, that was, yeah. Because if it's a toilet time, you don't want to tell them that.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, you don't really want to call the guy curtain jerker either. Like,
it's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
Audience choose their own, you know.
Yeah.
Toilet timers.
Yeah, yeah. But it was okay. So altogether, you know, you had about 15, 20 tours with Japan. Because you came back with the WWE Mania tour, too.
94, right? Remember?
Yeah, 94, yeah.
Remember we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was that interesting. Yeah, because WWE's
first you get to spend time with... Sorry, I keep talking over you. There's a little bit of a...
That's fine.
I mean, we're talking to each other 10,000 miles apart.
There's a slight delay. It's all good.
But you got to see Bret Hart, like, becoming, like, the... Like, you know, like, being a real, like, world champion. He liked to... He really liked to carry himself as a world champion, you know. Like, that came out over there. Like, he had great matches with people.
Yeah, I think so. And there was a four match in tour. That just he had a single match against Yokozuna, single match against Macho Man Randy Savage, single match against.
Did he have Tenryu?
He didn't have Tenryu that time. No,
Randy had Tenryu.
Right. That was another match. Tokyo Dome show. Yeah, another Tokyo Dome show.
But Bret Hart, some kind of a tag team.
Randy worked with Tenryu on that tour too. I think it was at the Green Dome in Osaka or in Sapporo.
Okay. So it was the perfect tour for Bret Hart to be world champion. All four, you know, matches, all four shows, four different opponents, all single match title match. Yeah. This is good. And every match had a different finish, which is good.
You know who killed it? You know who was really hard to follow? Like, I'm glad I didn't have to follow them. Was Medusa and Bull.
Bull Nakano.
They killed it every night.
Yeah,
Medusa got color, and they got mad at her, but she tried to say it was hard way.
Uh-uh.
Ball hit her with the nunchucks, you know.
Because the juice was no. Yeah, right.
Yeah, what were those tours like compared to, we were talking about it earlier when you said the Mexican guys would come over and they would lay it in a little harder and they would just wrestle a little bit different. When you guys, when talking about WWF, when you did the Japanese tour or European tour, how was it? Was it much different than doing the house show in the States? Was there a different
approach? People were hotter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because they don't see you as much. It's more, you know, special.
It was just a different – they were just – it was – they weren't as overexposed to the product. Like, because we – in the States, we go to these towns, like, once a month or once every, you know, quarter.
Right.
And, you know, they get jaded and they get, like, used to everything. And it's harder to impress – people, you know, when you're there all the time. And so, like, when we go to Europe, man, like, there was no popcorn match in Europe, man. You could go on after intermission and the people are still hot. Japan, in the WWF Japan tour that I was on, the people still felt like they wanted to see what they saw on TV, but they still reacted to, like, I still worked the Japanese style there when I went there. Like, I worked, you know, how I knew that they reacted to false finishes and different things. And there was just a little bit different way to work in Japan. And not, you know, not everyone knew how to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about this recently because we were talking about Hakushi. So I went on to YouTube and they have some of this stuff on YouTube. So you and Fatu had a great match.
You would never see it.
Yeah, it was like the first match on the show and it was totally different from what you would see back then.
I slipped one over on him with like a not a victory roll, but like a
I was gonna say victory roll too, like a head.
No, it was a victory roll. Yeah, it was a victory roll.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a long match too. It was something you would never see on TV back then.
I kicked out everything. He beat the crap out of me. I kept kicking out, and I slipped one over
like a monster too. It was real, like monster versus, you know, David and Goliath kind of match. But when I see these, I go, man, I don't remember WWF being like that when I was watching back then. It was just different. It was just different. So I'm assuming there was just different expectations from the crowd.
And then wasn't the fixed there. Match
only
yet.
In Japan. Yeah. Only in Japan, honestly. Everywhere else, we just worked the same.
Mm.
Right. Mm. And pretty much the lineup's the same, too, for like the entire month, right?
Yeah.
Four shows, that the Yokohama, the Hiroshima, the Osaka, the Sapporo, four shows. All the magazines and the Tokyo Sports following it. So you almost had to have different matchups every night.
Yeah.
There and also, like, match.
Yeah. And I remember my own, Yokohama was the first night. Yeah. And I was working with Rick Martel, who was like AWA world champion, right?
Right.
Like
before, just a couple years earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they gave me the finish. Like, it was some kind of screw job finish where, like, oh, he puts his foot on the ropes, or like, I'm like, come on, man, this is Rick Martel. We're in Japan. They don't go for that crap here.
He was so just there just right before.
I had him get me in the Boston Crab. I got to the ropes once, and then he got it into me again, and I went for the ropes and almost got there, and he pulled me back in the middle, and
then you
I tapped out. Right. Yeah, oh, and it worked
convincing.
Great.
Yeah. Really convincing. Yeah. No screw job.
No way. Right. Wasn't going to do it there, man.
Right, right.
And it still leaves Rick Martel with some edge, you know.
I just wasn't going to be the guy that got beat by a screw job finish in Japan, man. Yeah. Like, you just don't do that there.
Right, it's almost like he didn't win.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Because that tour, the lineup, the guys who were on the tour was, you know, the really strong. Bret Hart, Undertaker, the Macho Man, Yokozuna, Owen Hart, Bob Backlund, Bam Bam Bigelow, Smoking Guns, the Someone SWAT team, the great line, Doink. It was a strong, you know, package.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like everybody but Hulk Hogan almost. Yeah. So he was really strong. Yeah. But I guess that the Japanese audience wasn't completely ready for the product yet, you know?
I mean, if you go by the crowd, it's like, yeah, I would have to say that was the case. The buildings were like half full. I mean, they weren't embarrassing crowds, but they weren't like
hot.
Yeah, man, we didn't just sell out. You know, I mean, usually when we went overseas, we sold the places out.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. Yeah.
The only place I remember not selling out was when we went to Italy. Not that great. No.
Right. Yeah, but that was during the time, like when you talked about, you know, a little while ago, that the. You had a lot of overseas tours during the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we were in Singapore and the Philippines and India, Israel. Yeah. Several times, like more than one, like maybe four or five times to Israel, Portugal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was like a Disneyland almost, you know, like a Walt Disney on Ice. Kind of thing, almost.
Or like Epcot Center, like here, you know, in Epcot Center, they have like this, it's all the, like, all the different countries, right? It was like...
It's a small world?
Well, not that. It was like, they just have these showcases all over, like, with different countries. And like, you go, like in Japan, they have like a bunch of people, like with native Japanese costumes and, you know, anyways. Yeah, it was cool, man. I got to see the world, Fumi.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, so it's like, I can't believe it's a 2023. Yeah, it makes sense that now you're finally writing a book.
Yeah. I mean, they could have come, like, you know, like, I guess I shouldn't beat myself up and go, I should have done it sooner because, you know, now must have been the right time, right? Or else I wouldn't be doing it now. So,
yeah, but
just having a hard time, like sometimes with remembering, like sometimes I don't remember certain things till I'm in bed at night, you know?
Yeah.
So but I need to jot them down on a piece of paper so I can tell.
Right. Now it's coming together, right? But I, like I said, it's impossible to have just one book, you know? So let's have this one book first. And it's almost, I'm sure it's because you try to cover so much that you probably wish you would go more details.
Yeah, certain areas of parts of my life, you know, maybe afterwards, just zoom in on that particular, subject. So Chris Jericho does that. Chris Jericho does that,
I was
going to
say. Yeah, because first book wouldn't do it. So it's like already thinking of a second book because that portion you didn't talk about. Yeah. That's important and completely different theme and different issue, you know? So, you'll probably get that. So it's like I'm looking forward to see this very first book. Yeah, man.
It's not coming out until I'm happy with it. So it might.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
okay.
It's gonna, the guy I'm doing it with, I even told him, I'm like, I know we might not be going at the pace you'd like to, but man, like, I want to make sure I don't miss out. I don't miss some important stuff, you know?
Right. You communicate with him good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Does he know wrestling well?
Very well. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's good. Because sometimes everybody has a certain way of understanding wrestling. You know, and everybody's different a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So you can't expect him to understand the way you understand. There's no way, you know. And
if I'm just like, it's ideal because, you know, Fumi, if I'm talking to somebody and I have to explain to him every little thing that like that's kind of insider, like, you know, it can get frustrating for everyone.
Right,
so.
Right. Yeah. And also, It's a little bit different, but you can openly talk about wrestling a lot more than you used to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and
my wife's an author too. My wife is the one that's been really encouraging me to get this done. You know.
Yeah, of course.
Because like all the stories I tell her, Fumi, you know, like something will pop into my head and I'll tell her, and she go, you know, keep telling me you got to. You know, get your book done.
Yeah.
And she's also a great author, man.
It's inspiring for some people, you know?
Yeah.
It could be embarrassing to you on your part, but that can inspire some people.
So, let's be real, man. Come on. Like, it's pretty hard to embarrass me at this point. I've already pretty much been open about, like, you know, everything.
A lot of things, yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with it. You know, I'm not proud of a lot of the stuff, but like,
it's okay.
It's important. It's part of my story, even the bad stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
And it's why I'm proud of the person I am today. I'm a better person, Fumi. Like wasn't a bad person all those years ago, but I'm a way better person now.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. No, you've always been a really good person.
I had a few years there where I think, like, you know, I kind of might have been, you know, less than great.
I think we all had.
I think my heart was always good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I don't like the person I was for a while, Fumi.
Right. It's okay, but that was then, this is now, and you're ready to tell the story to the world. And you got to share this. With war.
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Huh. It's like, I wish we had more time and the COVID shit, you know, and all this, but I'm going to come and visit you.
Are you coming for me, please?
Yeah.
We got plenty of room, man. Plenty of room.
Yeah, I'm going to come and visit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss you very much. We have as much time as you want, by the way. Like, I'm always happy to.
Yeah, chat.
Be able to talk to you, man. It feels like hanging out with my friend, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That was great.
Someday, in your book or from you. I want to hear more about your time in Mexico because I know you spent time there, but
we'll get into it.
It's all good. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, we talked about a lot of stuff today, but get the book, everyone. You know,
there was some tough times, you know, like real dark stuff happened in Mexico. But I also like absolutely loved it there too, man. You know, it's just, it was a magical place to be. It's in the comp, like I loved the guys, like I loved all the people that I worked with down there. Man, I had some issues with, you know, the boss, you know, but like overall, I loved it, man. I had a great time down there. That's cool. Yeah. I missed those guys down there.
Yeah.
All right.
And that for the Universal, being in Universal with all those guys made it so much easier for me when I went down there.
Really?
You know, because I knew like half those guys, I wrestled their fathers, you know?
Ah, okay.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. That's like Psycho Clown, all those guys. I wrestled so many of those guys.
You know their dads.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
That's how it is. Yeah. I've seen that more and more.
So many wrestling families down there. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. All right.
Well, if you want to, we can wrap up for today, Sean. Is there anything you want to plug or let people know about that you're doing or working on lately these days?
No, man. I'm just enjoying being a grandfather and being like married to an amazing lady. And life is great.
Good. Life is good. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So great.
Oh, so good to know that. Yeah.
And people can watch you on Raw this week, right? It was the 30th.
Last week, excuse me.
I'm all bobbled up. Last week.
No, I watched it the day after, you know, on YouTube without cutting commercials and stuff. Yeah. Mm.
That's enough for a while, right? Like we've been on for like twice in the past 3 months or something. So
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we can hold off on DX click reunions for a while.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're going to be around WrestleMania weekend, like Los Angeles.
I'm sure you there.
Yeah.
I got some things I'm doing here.
You are not retired. You once you're a wrestler, you always will be professional wrestler.
Yeah, I haven't ruled out doing it again, but. Last year, man, I, you know, ended up having to get surgery to fix my bicep. So I want to make sure it's really special occasion if I do it again.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure I take the time to prepare and be in shape. Like people wanted me like be in the Royal Rumble. Like, hey, no way. Like I've been sitting around eating a lot of food and just enjoying my life. And like, don't really want to like, you know, don't look that great without my, I don't look bad, but you know, dude, when you're going to come back like that, you need to dial it in. Look good.
Edge is setting the standard a little
bit. Yeah. Or like, I looked pretty good last year when I came back. But yeah.
Yeah. But then
I'm not retired for me, but I come on the show. I'm like, not in a hurry to do it again. I'm not saying I ever will, but like, you know, I haven't ruled anything out.
Right. Cool. Life is good.
Let's wrap then. So if people want to contact you, Sean and Fumi-san, where can we find you on the internet? Where's the best
way? You can't.
Oh, I heard you were doing a detox. Social media detox.
No, I just don't, like, I don't know, man. Like, I
no, I hear that, man. I
just like to chill at home and spend time with my dog. Okay. I'm not in a hurry for anybody to get a hold of me.
Okay, so it's Ixnay. don't get a hold of Sean Waltman. He's got stuff going on.
Unless you're my friend.
Unless you're his friend.
And if you're my friend, you already know how to get a hold of me.
Yeah, so just wait for the book. Fumi, where can we reach you on the internet?
On Twitter, Fumihiko Daio, FumiHiko. DAYO, Fumihiko Daio on Twitter or just Fumi Saito on Facebook. Please message me first.
And I'll give you my Twitter at the Real X-Pac.
At the Real X-Pac
on Instagram. It's just, I'm not good at returning messages.
But if you want to see what he's up to, you can check that out.
Yeah, please. Yeah. It's not that I don't care. I love everybody. I just, I don't have the bandwidth anymore.
No, I hear that. On Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, K-N-I-P-P-E-R. That's it. So until next time, Fumi, want to take it away?
Thanks, Sham. It was great. It was really great that you came on. And, well, other than that, let's chat on not a podcast, but I'll call you, okay?
Okay. I love you, Fumi.
All right. So long from Tokyo.
Bye. Thanks, Sean. Write that down, we say.